Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Ken Edwards with the NCL. Fred Maher. Is it Fred?
How dare you ask me that question?
Fred Maher.
It's okay, Pam. You can leave. I'm back. Hey, Ken. It's pronounced Ed Maher.
And welcome back, Phil Davidson.
Thank you, everybody. Good to be back. Thanks for all the kind words of support.
Yeah, that was a nice eulogy that you did for your dad. I have a message for Pam Bondi.
Okay.
And she is the...
Does she have an Apple book on you yet?
She's the...
burn book.
Her burn book, yes.
She will after this message. Okay. It's like, Pam's the U.S. attorney, right?
She's the attorney general.
Attorney general. Whatever it's called. Yeah. All right. Attorney general.
Ken's a lawyer, folks.
It was. So here's my message to Pam Bondi. Satan is happy with your progress. Because it's just... Did you see the thing last week? She's getting grilled about the Epstein files, right?
Yes.
And I'm going to tell we're going to tie this back to the worker bees in a second. But she just decides, she goes off the rails. And she says, listen, the Dow just hit 50,000. That's what we should be focused on.
Right.
Don't worry about these pedophiles and Epstein files.
The line of women standing behind me.
Yeah, don't worry about them. You should be concentrated on the fact that everybody's 401k is just through the roof right now and, you know, the blah, 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 blah. Well, listen, how many people have 401ks? Half the population?
Well, 56%. I think somewhere around 50% of workers have 401ks.
Okay. And so that's whatever, 100 million people.
Yeah.
Maybe less. What about the other 100 million?
That would be nothing. Nothing, Ken.
Right. So the Dow having 50,000, hitting 50,000 means nothing to probably more than half the population.
For sure.
And then, Bill, you talked about this. They re-upped their jobs report. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my God, the economy's great. Look at the Dow. Jobs, jobs, jobs. There aren't jobs.
It's scary, yeah.
What do they do?
They were clamoring because I think the job numbers that came out this week were like the economy added 130,000 jobs.
Right.
And obviously Trump said,
yeah,
best job numbers and all, you know, ever, of course. And
yeah.
This is great. The economy is churning. But then when they do that, then they do a revision of the previous years.
Mm-hmm.
And it found that what was originally reported was 584,000 jobs were created last year, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which is not a great number to begin with, but
that's exactly right.
It's fine.
Yeah.
When they did the revision, it was actually 181,000 jobs.
That's it.
Overall, added in 2025. The year before, 2024, 1.4 million jobs were added.
But how do you say that the job, like, everything's great, and then you revise your own jobs report back and say, okay, oh, sorry, we made a 300,000 person mistake, and those job numbers are the worst in like 25 years.
They're frightening.
And
think that we only added 180,000 jobs for an entire year.
And Phil, you know where the jobs come from? Healthcare.
Yeah.
And I think education, if I'm not mistaken.
It's the two things that are entirely recession proof.
Yeah.
Retirement homes.
That's where the jobs were. So it's not like the jobs were in construction because they're trying to cancel the project. It's not like the jobs are in
government.
You know, government because he just fired 500,000 government workers. So where are the jobs and where are they supposed to be as AI starts to replace people, as Waymo starts to replace Uber drivers, as these little things start to replace
as Argentinian soybean farmers replace American soybean farmers?
Yeah, I don't know. It's the point being is that don't fall for the gaslighting. You know, don't listen to the nonsense, the noise, right? Do your own research or simply listen to this show because we will call balls and strikes. If things are great, happy to report that things are great. If things are bad, we're going to say that things are bad. But don't come to a hearing, Pam Bondi, about pedophile ring and talk about the Dow. It's just like talk about a just blatant.
That's what my therapist would call, you're being very defensive.
It's just like, you're not ready for this.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we have two guests, sort of a different ends of the spectrum, but one is United Healthcare. They're coming in. They're a sponsor of the show. They do Worker Wednesdays, and we're talking about big, you know, kind of big picture stuff. And then more locally, we have the Rockford Teachers Association coming in, REA. They just settled a contract, big news, massive, massive union. And so we have the head of that local coming in as well to talk with us about, you know, their struggles and what they went through and finally how they got to success. So we'd like to hear some success stories out of labor. We'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor, Ken, Ed, Phil. And as we said at the top of the hour, we are psyched to have with us today Claudia Marshall, president of the REA, which stands for, Claudia?
Rockford Education Association.
All right. Woohoo.
Welcome, Claudia. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And big news, right? So we've been talking about this past couple of weeks. And by the way, it seems like lately, because there's one going on in San Francisco, massive amount of like teacher strife, right? Teacher strikes and, you know, things like that. Yeah. Hospitals as well, nurses. But we were talking sort of locally, and you're in Rockford. And Rockford, for those of you that don't know, is about 90 miles west of Chicago, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you guys have been fighting for a contract for how long?
We started at the table with the district last March. So March 7th, it would be a full year.
Wow. Wow. All right.
No contract for a full year.
And talk about the REA in general.
We are 2,000 members strong.
Nice.
And in our union, we cover teachers, nurses, counselors, speech and language pathologists, psychologists, and social workers.
And they have those positions in the district.
Yes.
And let me ask you this, just because now I'm curious. Is that unique? Because that's a lot of like sort of progressive positions that I think other school districts around the country probably don't have.
I think more schools have those positions more than you might realize.
Is that right?
Today's a different world. Today's a different world. It's a different classroom. It's a different need. There's a lot of, you know, so I think you'd be surprised to find.
That's good.
And this is across how many schools?
We have 41 schools.
Wow.
Five high schools. And
how long have you been a teacher?
This is my 32nd year.
Ooh.
It's my third year as president.
Okay.
And so I was in the classroom 29 years before taking this venture on.
And so the president of the REA gets, what do they call it, union leave?
It's called full-time release.
Full-time release.
And the REA is a large enough union and has enough need that myself and the vice president, Christine Fowler-Nash, are full-time release. And she is the only full-time release vice president in the state of Illinois. So
because you guys are that big.
Because we're that big and we need it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
So you must get an enormous stipend for doing that job, right?
Well, no, not really. Not really. Actually,
well, here let's dispel this myth because I've heard like, oh, these union
not as
bosses
much as a superintendent, that's for sure.
Yeah,
no, like, yeah,
you get top salary, right? Because you, and by the way, you're already at the top of your mm-hmm. scale. Plus, you get an extra 2%, 2.5%.
I get an extra 0.25.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
So, and then Christine gets an extra 0.2.
Don't spend it all in one place,
right?
Okay.
Right.
And,
actually,
and for that, instead of working your regular teacher's hours, you're working 7 days a week. You're bargaining in the middle of the night.
Full year. It's not a 9 month for us
right,
anymore.
It's a right? full-time gig year round.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, you know, for everybody that's like, oh, you know, wow, it's so easy. You know, I want that cake job. It's not a cake job.
It's not a cake job.
Right?
At
Sleepless
all.
Nights, stress, et cetera.
It is 24/7. Yeah.
Oh, you're preaching the choir. I think everybody at this table has been there and done that.
Oh,
Phil,
yeah.
Phil still has to do it.
Every once in a while, yes.
Early morning calls, late night emails, yeah.
What were you bargaining over? And then we'll get to the good news. But yeah,
okay.
how did this all begin?
Well, it began with a contract and a very fresh green team, but very hungry to make things better. And so it started with a contract that had 172 asks and changes.
Ooh.
We were told we were foolish. We were told we were green, that we didn't know what we were getting into. But again, when you don't know, sometimes that allows for fire and hunger that, you know, there was nobody telling us we couldn't do because we didn't know any different. And so the team really just charged forward and 172 changes.
Aim high, always.
Right. All right.
Well, it's a negotiation,
exactly.
Right? You start here, they start there, and you find your way to the
well,
middle.
Well, if you needed, though, I mean, Claudia, if you needed those changes to get your contract to where it needed to get to, in other words, if it had fallen behind or the wages had fallen behind or language was antiquated or whatever.
Oh, absolutely. You know, all of the above.
Right. I get it. No, listen, I understand because sometimes you have a contract that like, hey, everything is squeaky clean. Let's just talk about money and we'll get in and get out. But that's not the case here.
No,
right?
No.
But you guys were also far behind in terms of dollars and cents.
Oh,
yeah?
We're really far behind market value. 21 up to 26% behind market value of all the districts around us. you know, the thing is, I started in this district when the contract was the Cadillac contract for the state. We were the barometer, for, not only for the districts around us, but through the whole state.
And what do you think happened over the years?
A lot of change, a lot of different changes everywhere, you know. And then let's, you know, people still say, oh, COVID, baloney. COVID is going to impact schools and what is and isn't happening for a long time yet still. And so a lot of different things have come together to create where we're at now.
So you guys finally, after a year of negotiations, got a tentative agreement, right?
Yes, we did. Thursday night about 10:30.
Okay. And then from there, what happens?
From there, we will have an all-member meeting on February 21st and present everything to our members and explain how and where and why it's landed where it did and go forward with a vote from the members.
So it's in person?
Yes.
And how many people? 2,000?
2,000.
So you're going to rent a, like a, what do? You rent a hall?
We go to
something?
One of the high school gyms. I would like to say in working with this union and trying to get it back to some of the glory that it used to have, we are quite proud to say that when we did meet to take an intent to strike vote, which we did to be prepared, we had 1,419 members show up.
Very nice.
And 1,393 voted to strike if needed, 98%. We haven't seen numbers in our union like that. It's time. We've got a little bit of a coming together story outside of just the negotiation.
Yeah, that's impressive.
That's really cool.
When you have 98% vote to take a strike if necessary, it's a really powerful signal to the district that you're serious.
Yeah. And also to the parents, right? The parents that have, you know, both parents are working, right? And so you had said off the air that one of the reasons that you think that you got this tentative agreement was because of the public. And your brothers and sisters in the labor movement.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've had support.
Because after a year, I mean, that's a long time of bargaining. And so what turned the tide?
I think reaching out to the community and showing and sharing and communicating, reaching out to the union brothers and sisters and just sharing where we're at. And anybody in the union, when you hear not working with a contract for a year, that brings, you know, empathy and sympathy right away. And then in good union work comes the what can we do? How can we help?
Yeah,
so
it.
We've had, again, our own unions within the Rockford District that are supporting us, but we've also got the Rockford United Labor. Sarah Dorner is the president of Rockford United Labor. And she was the first one on board to reach out and say, we know it's getting to this point. We know it's getting, you know, tumultuous. What can we do to support? And again, having a team that's green and new, I said to her, I don't know what we need. What do we need, Sarah?
Yeah.
Help. Wave the white flag,
yeah.
Right? So she then just went into action and started doing what she knows to do, which I'm learning along the way now of what she did. And she just was the lead. And it's organizing. It's organizing,
sure.
Right? And we've had incredible support from the unions around us and organizing. Electricians, the carpenters.
The operators.
Yes, everyone.
Just making sure.
Yeah. We'll go with it.
Laborers.
How was the community overall? How parents, did you feel a lot of support there?
Yes, and that is truly the variable that changed, that made movement at the table Monday night. And, you know, all of the things, social media and the way things, you know, wildfire and spread and the communication traps and truths, right? But we felt very early on by remaining true to what we're fighting for, which is student need, getting students what they need in classrooms.
Yep.
Yes, it's salary and benefits, of course. You want the people that are working with the children to have a good livelihood,
yeah.
But it's also about getting students what they need. And just pushing forward and communicating with the community and the other unions of this is what we're fighting for and why. I think it opened up support. I have seen, yes, we've seen negative comments, but we've seen way more positive comments and support. And I can't tell you how many people just say right away, I don't care what the teachers want, give it to them, they deserve
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So that's a little drastic response.
Sure.
But
put me in that category, for
same,
sure.
It's
same.
A much more positive response than, you know, some of the others. So that's what guided and pushed the team and kept them on focus and kept them pushing forward to get this done was that the community really took a voice, stepped forward. We did a hotline with calling and leave a message for the superintendent with your questions and comments. And we did an email blast. And I think last time those numbers, we sent like 10,000 emails just asking and
awesome.
You know, respond. And there's a duty, right? There's a duty for the school board to respond. They're elected officials put in that position to make decisions for children.
Yep.
And so I think that there were, because of us being able to reach out in the community and communicate the need, that then went from the community to the school board, and something changed because they came in Monday night with something we could start working
with.
And
how many people on the board?
Seven.
On the school board?
Yes.
So you have a superintendent?
Well, yes. So he would be considered on the school board too, but seven voted on members.
Okay. And are those elected?
Yes.
And they're just residents of the community.
Yes. And they don't have to have any educational background or any really connection in any way other than...
Well, we have the same thing in our federal government.
Superintendent hired his son-in-law.
Right.
All right. So listen, first of all, thank you so much for taking the ride all the way down here on a Sunday morning. We appreciate that. And kudos to you guys for fighting the good fight.
Thank you.
You know, it's frustrating to see, because look, I'm sure that they had lawyers sitting across the table from you, correct?
Don't get me started.
Okay.
Wait, I have to say this part. Our team was 11 teachers,
and
we felt to the best of our ability, we covered every area. You know, I'm not a special ed teacher. I'm an English teacher.
Yep.
But we made sure to have representation on our team to the
makes
best
sense.
Of every corner and facet we could.
Yeah.
And we had 11 educators and the degrees and the years of experience. I mean, we're talking hundreds of hours and degrees.
Yeah.
They had seven on their side.
Mm-hmm.
Three were lawyers. two were HR.
Mm-hmm.
One was the head finance.
Yeah, no, I get
and
it.
One educator, one principal.
One. Yeah. So how much do they spend on lawyers? Do you know?
Oh, you're going to get me started on this one, too.
It's got to be like $1,500 an hour.
Well, it's yeah.
Well, if there's three lawyers, right? I mean,
well,
not to mention the emotional damage of having to deal with lawyers for that long.
Three of them.
Whoa,
yeah, nobody
Phil.
Preps you for that. Nobody preps you for the
Phil, nobody wants to hear your opinion
PTSD
about lawyers.
After that.
You're self-loathing. What are you talking about?
But the one I met, some of them were probably on staff, but I'm sure they hired outside counsel, correct?
Yes, and we actually invoiced that.
Yeah, you FOIA'd their bills?
Yeah, we sure did.
How
and
much
they
was
didn't
it?
Like that. Well, it was for the outside counsel, it was $555,000, but they also kept on their district lawyer for an extended contract for $125,000.
All right.
And then when we shared that information, they came back and said, well, wait a minute. That's not all on just his service for negotiations against the REA. We've got some other things going on in SPED law. I said SPED lawsuits from parents because you haven't done right by their children. Do you want me to share those numbers or do you want me to stick with we've spent $700,000 on you this year?
We can break those down.
You know, we can break
good
it down
for you.
Differently.
And look, that's a choke point, right? That's a leverage point.
And
in the public sector, we have that right as public information.
Yeah. The voice.
So good for you.
The voice.
That's a powerful, powerful tool. So you guys are ratifying next week.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, assuming everything goes, is it retro?
I cannot speak to that.
Fair enough.
Retro has been, I guess I can speak to it this way. Retro has been on the table. We have made it clear from the get-go our members will. It's money they've earned.
Yeah.
They've been working in good faith. It's a long process.
Okay.
We've got a good enough what we believe to present to the members.
Very good.
Very
awesome.
Nice.
Awesome.
Nicely
good for you.
Done.
Yeah. All right. Listen, thank you so much for coming in. We wish you luck on your ratification vote. I'm sure it's going to go great. And kudos to you guys for fighting the good fight. We appreciate it. We'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Workers' Mic. More show to come. Sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people, just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN for the first time ever. We have a guest that is one of our sponsors that has actually never been on our show.
That's right.
Steve Sadlin, you are from United Healthcare?
Yes.
And your title?
I am the Chief Growth Officer of Labor and Trust at UHC.
Union space?
Yes, okay. Entirely.
All right. So, Steve, real quick, like, what's your background?
I'm a math and statistics guy by nature, so I actually have a technical background. I know it's
that's really interesting. Where did you go to school?
I went to UConn. I'm a Connecticut guy.
Whoa, Huskies.
Yeah.
Big East. I like it.
Yeah, okay. But I found my way into the consulting world, and essentially I've spent my entire career and really, especially the last 15 years, focused on really strategizing and working with labor and trust health funds. Right. Okay. So I have a benefits background broadly, so I also work with retirement plans. But really, it's the last 15 years I've been really specializing in the healthcare space.
You like it?
I love it.
And then what made you pivot over to United Healthcare?
Well, so for me, in the consulting role, I got to have a front row seat to seeing how a lot of different carriers were working with these labor and trust funds. And I was always really impressed, candidly, with what UHC was doing. I think from a standpoint of the capabilities that they have, but the innovation and some of the resources that they were putting towards, you know, what I think are pretty unique solutions that really are tailored and fit the labor world pretty well.
Yeah, well,
but honestly haven't made their way there quite yet.
Well, I'm good. I'm glad you're here because we desperately need this, right? We're getting hammered right now with cost increases and, Ed and I both come from Local 150, the operating engineers, where we stood up doctor's offices and we have retirement medical savings plans and we did this and did this and did this.
Yeah.
And, I say we, I really mean the leaders of the union. Had nothing to do with Ed and I, but they've turned over every single rock in the world to try and save money and keep costs down. And it's just impossible.
Yeah, I know that unions all over the country are getting hit. Like individual customers, like everybody, the cost of healthcare is out of hand here. Just in this plan year and next year, it looks like it's unmanageable. Even for folks like you said, Ken, who have tried every sort of bolt-on pre-authorization, wellness program, all these things to save a percent or a half a percent or something like that, it's just gotten really challenging.
And why is that? Like, why is, you tell us, Steve, why has health insurance gotten so expensive?
So it's a totally fair question. And I would even tell you, if you hear anybody who says that there's really one reason why healthcare costs are so high, they're lying to you, right? It's always a multitude of factors. I would say some of the things we're seeing, obviously inflationary pressures would be the number one.
Yep.
You've also seen, and actually I'm sure a lot of the membership can relate to it, and they've seen a lot of what we're calling provider consolidation.
Yep.
So you have some of these hospital systems, right, that have bought up smaller hospital systems.
Sure.
And obviously that then puts some increased cost pressure on things. There's also, and I would say is actually a pretty, it's a positive in some respects. There's been some unbelievable advancements in medicine, right? But there's a cost that goes along with it.
Oh,
so there are some incredible things that we can do now that we never could do before, but there is a price tag that goes with it. So that's another contributing factor.
Gene therapy and some of these inflammation medications and stuff like that.
No question about it. It is interesting you say about the consolidation because, like, especially in Chicago, when you drive down the block and it used to be like, Erie Health Clinic, and all of a sudden it's like, so-and-so health clinic, and now it's Advocate Health Clinic. Like, they changed the sign on the clinic like three times in a month.
Yeah.
Like, wait, who owns this now?
Yeah, one of the biggest medical networks in Chicago that I'm not going to name had to purchase a bunch of hospitals in Florida and Arizona just to spend money because it made so much money it was in danger of losing its nonprofit status.
Okay, ridiculous. So for those of you listening, right, so we're here in Illinois and we have Blue Cross Blue Shield for the most part that does probably 80% of labor, right? They have a pretty good lock on the market. They're called the Blues. But they're set up differently. There's Blue Cross of Illinois, there's Blue Cross of Wisconsin. There's not one, right? UHC is different.
Yeah. So what you're talking about, Ken, is so at UHC, we are one national network, right? So essentially, as you cross over different state lines, right, it doesn't matter.
It's
a continuous network, sort of regardless of where you live.
Mm-hmm.
And, as we've seen, with some consolidation amongst funds or locals, right, as they've grown and span across different state lines, the value of having a national network has definitely been something that's more important to be given consideration.
It's a really good point because a lot of, let's use the carpenters, for example, right? They've consolidated, they've grown, they've got multi-state, they're trying to merge pensions, health insurance, things, consortiums, and it's got to be a nightmare. With if you're dealing with one in one state, one in another state, two in this state, that kind of thing, right? So you guys have spanned the network, spanned the whole country,
exactly.
So I'll tell you this, and so I'm really glad that you're here. Part of the coalition's goal, the National Coalition of Labor's goal, is to leverage economies of scale and to get labor unions to do things together. And sometimes you know, that's really easy to do, and other times it's damn near impossible. And there's egos, there's politics, there's relationships. There's just, like you said, there's not one reason sure. that we can't do this, but we should be able to do it. And so I want to say 2-3 years ago, as we've gone around the country and traveled, right, unions have asked us for two things. One is, do you guys have your own pension/annuity retirement plan? And we said, we don't, but we can certainly help stand one up. And so that we're in the process of doing that. More to come on that, but that's coming soon. Second is health insurance. So the unions that, for example, you know, that only represent like Local 420 in
Wisconsin,
they do We Energy, right? The benefits come through the employer. Mm-hmm. And you come down here in Chicago, Local 150, for example, we have our own health and welfare plan. And I'd say 80% of our members participate in that plan, right?
Right. I mean, you have several thousand employers, so those employers just participate in a fund. It's easier than relying on all those employers to provide
But healthcare. if you could get everybody, you know, or as many as humanly possible, to say, hey, everybody, we're going to go with UHC, and we're going to create a nationwide labor network. You have to figure that that would help us drive the price of doing business down. Am I right about that?
Or I think that's fair to say, right? Just the nature of insurance in general, right? If you
spread
can spread out as much risk across more people, that gives you plenty of advantages from a pricing standpoint, from a negotiation standpoint, right?
So how much will it cost us? What? Did you say free for the first year? That's fantastic.
I've heard so much.
Well, so Ken, it's funny. You're hitting on kind of a thesis, say, that I've had for a while. One of the, you know, when you talk about how complex healthcare has become,
yes,
and the importance of simplicity, and honestly, I think it's almost overlooked now. But I would imagine, right, with a national type plan, or if you're creating something where it could be available, right, to other funds or other groups around the country,
yeah.
But it needs to be offered in a way that's still simple and familiar to what they maybe had before.
Right.
And I think it's neat, because what you've kind of been challenged with in those conversations and stuff that we're thinking about, for instance, at UHC, is how can we accommodate that? And we know that, you know, the national network part, we have, right?
Right.
We know that.
Yes.
And we can offer that already. And it's been pretty neat to see where we've been given a lot of thought to how we could accommodate those things, right? As these cost pressures are truly unsustainable and the things that they're up against, we know that we got to be more creative, and we got to be thinking about those things a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And we need to do things in a way that's not going to upend what they've seen before, or maybe what they've had, but how can we do that in a way that still looks familiar, feels familiar, and it can still offer, you know, really strong benefits.
And maybe give some choice, right? Like, look, you know, I'll just say it for what it's worth. At Local 150, we have what's called a marketplace. You can take the platinum plan, the bronze plan, the gold plan, depending on your needs, whatever.
And how many hours you work.
How many hours you work. And you save the rest of your credits, if you will, for retirement. I mean, it seems to me that, in my humble opinion, that if we could take something like that and scale it nationwide, then you could have small unions, big unions, you know, right in between unions. Like, how many labor folks do you have at UHC?
Yeah, so we serve 1 million labor members across the country.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So it's not like you guys are not familiar with this. You already have a ton of unions in it, right?
Yeah.
And so if we could get everybody together and go, hey, everybody, you know, let's at least take a look at this.
Yeah.
That's something that, you know, obviously we've been having some discussions with you guys and are going to continue those discussions. But I think that's the name of the game. And that's why, quite frankly, that you're here today is, we want to partner with somebody that understands labor, somebody that's not going to just, you know, view us as
The flea on the tail of the dog. You know.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
But we don't want to be that, right, at labor. Like, if there's millions and millions of labor folks out there, plus their families, right? So you're talking about a significant amount of bodies. Is that something that UHC is interested in doing?
Oh, no question. I actually think that model is pretty forward-thinking in terms of what that could look like, right? When you're talking about introducing more choice, you know, that's something that hasn't, you know, it hasn't manifested in other funds and stuff across the country for good reason in some instances, right? But I think offering that sort of choice and building that kind of foundational structure is probably the right place to be thinking about this, right? And that's certainly where we've been focused.
And giving unions the opportunity to provide health care to their members directly, where the members are relying on the union for health care rather than relying on the company. I mean, a model like this that's able to span state lines and offer you know, pricing incentives really to small unions that might have much higher prices, and it would stop them from ever looking at doing something like this on their own. When you're able to get into a pool with 50 other unions and start up something like this, all of a sudden you're saving money and your plan's probably cheaper than whatever your employer was offering in the first place.
Yeah, you make a really good point.
Sure.
So I know there are companies out there and employers out there and municipalities, and they're buying, you know, health insurance, whether it's through UHC or Blue Cross or whoever it is. They're buying it with 100 people, you know, 200 people. And they're getting taken to the cleaners because they don't have the economies of scale to purchase in a big manner. If you went to these employers and said, here, do you want to get out of the insurance business? Because there's got to be, I don't think there's an employer out there that wants to be in the insurance business, right? And provide insurance and retiree coverage and all this kind of stuff. Great. We'll take it off your hands. You give us blank number of dollars per hour. We'll have a marketplace. Our guys will get to buy whatever they want. And voila, we have, you know, at least taken a step in moving the ball forward in the right direction, as opposed to treading water like we're doing right now. And quite frankly, you know, barely keeping our head above water.
And if you keep the pricing down on health and welfare or healthcare spending, it frees up, if you're getting, you know, a 2%, 3%, 4% increase in your contract every year as a member, less of that money has to go toward healthcare and more can go toward check, retirement, training, whatever.
Sure.
And it frees up money to go somewhere else.
Steve, in that regard, you know, in talking about, you know, competition and making sure that unions are getting the best bang for their buck, you know, what do you suggest that funds, health and welfare funds, do, or unions themselves, or
trustees,
maybe as trustees, or even the employers, right? If I'm sitting across the table from an employer, you know, what should I tell that employer to do?
Yeah. So you're hitting on something that I'm pretty passionate about. So I feel like historically you were hearing that there was only one of two options, right? Costs are going up. Do you either need to cut the benefits,
right,
or do you need to put more money into the plan?
Right.
And honestly, it's possible that those might be it, but there is so much you can do before you need to get to that point. And there's a lot of new strategies and solutions that we're doing. You can operate within the plan design you have. There's things you can do now. We talked about provider consolidation. What if you're able to identify specific doctors within those provider systems that are actually delivering better quality outcomes for those people, right? And you're actually going to – that saves a lot of money. So those funds, as they're looking at it, that's a way to do it. The problem is, you know, unless you're going to go through an exercise where you get a chance to actually see, hey, what other options are there out there? You got to be able to, on a consistent basis, go out to the market and see what else is out there.
So, right? So a market check.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We would highly encourage that.
And explain what a market check is.
Yeah. So depending on who, you know, your medical carrier has been for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. If it's something that you haven't gone out and seen what else is out there, is there other competition? Doing a market check on a periodic basis where, you know, competitors, you know, UHC being one of them, would get an opportunity to say, hey, here's what we're doing, and it might look a little bit different in other strategies and solutions that maybe you're not thinking of now, right?
How do you deal with the members, though? It's like, I'm really comfortable with my current, you know, carrier. I really like my doctor, you know, et cetera. I'm really familiar with it. You know, what do you say to that member?
Yeah. Well, so part of those exercises you actually do part of that analysis is really looking to see how are the doctors going to be remaining in those same networks, right?
Perfect.
You can do all of that. Yeah. And one of the things that we really pride ourselves on too, first of all, our network is obviously very broad. So it's almost always there's very, very minimal interruption. Most of the doctors would stay in the network.
Yep.
But there are instances when that doesn't happen. We do pretty serious outreach to those specific doctors. We identify exactly who they are and do everything we can to bring them into our network.
Yeah. So it's called disruption, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd be like, hey, Dr. So-and-so,
bingo,
you need to come and get in here.
Bingo.
So what do you think, Steve? Are you on board with this? You think that UHC is the right move?
I'm very confident that we're the right solution for a lot of these labor funds. And I believe that that's an approach that we're really focused on. We know there's immediate needs that we need to serve across our customers right now and our clients.
Sure.
But, you know, one of the reasons I joined UHC, candidly, was that it was more forward thinking in terms of how we need to be positioned for the next 5 to 10 years, which lines up really well with what these labor funds are focused on. There's a long-term focus that they have that, candidly, you know, some of the rest of the market, it's a little bit more of 1, 2, or 3 years is all they're really looking ahead to.
Yes.
Right. And what we're talking about now is where the industry is going to go.
You're
and
talking,
we need to be positioned to do that.
Long game.
Exactly.
And UHC, look, listeners out there, say what you want, right, about UHC, about any other company. Doesn't really matter. UHC was the only one that, when we bantied this about 3-4 years ago, stepped to the plate and said, we're interested in doing a deal with you. We're interested in partnering with you. And so, you know, it's taking some time, right? Everything takes time.
Yep.
But much like Voya, that understood this is what the long game looks like, and we're going to take a chance with you, and they have, and have, you know, been a fantastic partner. You know, we think that UHC is going to be the same for us. So, you know, hopefully we'll have more news about this as we go forward. It's a heavy lift.
Yeah.
Right?
It is. It's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
But yeah, we really appreciate working together on this.
When is it going to happen?
It's a big aircraft carrier to turn, right?
I don't know. I mean, Steve's in charge of UHC, isn't he?
No, that's what I heard. Is what he said off the air.
He's the chief growth officer, labor and trust. How long have you worked for UHC?
I'm still very green. I've only come over within the last 6 months.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you're familiar with it all because you've already done all this consulting work. And like you said, you were on the front lines of this, like in at SEAL, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Got a front row view of a lot of UHC and competitors and other vendors.
You know, I met Steve for the first time a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Through a good friend of ours, Holly, good friend of the show, who managed to take us to the worst bar in Chicago. I shouldn't say worst, the diviest bar in Chicago, where they serve beer in paper cups.
You're not going to tell? Can you give a name?
I forget the name of it, Old Town Pub or something like that.
Okay.
It was one of those. But anyway, so I was like...
Thanks, Holly.
Yeah, thank you. Did you pick a worse place? But it was cool, and I enjoyed it because you guys sat down, and there's another Steve sitting behind him here that's not on, but it was there too. And they sat down, and it didn't matter where we were. Like, you guys weren't the people that, like, we need to go to Gibson Steakhouse and have a $300,000 meal and blah, 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 blah.
I like gold leaf on my steak. You know what I mean?
Goldschlager. But yeah. But then Steve handed me his business card. Both Steves did. And guess what's on that business card?
Union Bug.
Exactly right.
Absolutely.
Exactly right. So that was like reading the tea leaves. I thought that was smart. So, I mean, these are the kind of relationships that we like, that we want to have, and that we think that, you know, it's forward thinking. We simply need the, you know, we need a partner that can do this nationwide. Mm-hmm. And we think you guys are it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. We're looking forward to continuing it.
Yeah, we appreciate your sponsorship of the show. You guys do Worker Wednesdays for us, right?
Yeah.
And it's mostly 99% is Ed.
Quality health care for union members.
There you go. I love it. All right, listen, we will be back with more of the Workers' Mic. Thank you so much, Steve, for coming in. We really
appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll be back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. We had two cool guests, sort of different topics, but really
good news for once with the teachers.
Yeah, that was really cool, right? So one other quick thing. There's a company called Conn-Selmer, and they make and have for like 100 years make instruments for schools. You know, like tubas and, you know, all the instruments that kids in band play. I think they're UAW. They decided to they're going to close after 100,000 years, and they're just going to move their band production, equipment production to China. Or no, I think it might be Mexico. Either way, it's like, once again, where's, you know, where, big government's there when they don't want the bears to use a PLA,
yeah.
Right? There's like, oh, boom, we're right there. Where's the government saying, okay, you know, you can move over there. We're not going to buy your equipment anymore.
Yeah.
Right? We'll buy something made in America. And maybe there are none made in America anymore, but somebody should start one made in America.
Hopefully one sprouts up.
Buy American. So, you know, these 150 people are going to lose their jobs. And so, you know, once again, it just seems like, I don't know. They're talking out of both sides of the mouth. Economy's great, and we're losing all these jobs, and like we talked about earlier. So that's just a bummer.
We had a couple listeners of the week.
We do, yeah. We got Kelsey, who says, get out there and be active. Don't sit on the sidelines. Got a guy named Mike, one of my former stewards, called me, and he's been retired for some time from 150, just living life and is happy. We want to end with a quick kind of cool story about our roadside assistance.
Yeah, we had a member, an 88-year-old member's daughter, call from Mississippi. She was with her father. The South had a run of cold weather that they're not used to.
Yeah, maybe freezing, right?
Don't handle as well as we do, or not as prepared for. They had frozen lines, frozen trees. A tree broke and landed across the road that led to their house. Their power went out. They had no electricity. This elderly man and his daughter are in a car, trying to use the heat in the car to just stay warm because their house is cold. They call the roadside assistance on their through the car insurance. They say, oh, we can't get anybody out there. They call the roadside assistance through the National Coalition of Labor, and these folks climbed over the tree on foot, brought cans of gas.
Whoa.
And yeah. The daughter said, you know, if not for them, she's not sure about herself, but she said her father wouldn't have survived. So, yeah, we're looking into figuring out who the actual employee was who got out and on foot climbed over the branches to help these folks out. But
yeah, we appreciate it.
We all have good in our hearts.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, that was really cool. So we will end with that positive note, and then we'll be back next week with more of the Workers Mike right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of the Workers Mike was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of the Workers' Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.